You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM.
Plugged In on KBOO is a radio show dedicated to underground electronic music. The show is hosted by DJ Tronic and features deep house, house, tech house, techno, drum and bass, breakbeats, future bass, downtempo, and more. Plugged In frequently has local producers and DJs on the show, and we provide info about upcoming events in Portland, including free ticket giveaways. Plugged In airs the first and third Friday of every month from 10 p.m. to 12 a.m. Pacific time.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available at our website at kboo.fm. The nominating committee meets on the second Tuesday of the month at 6 p.m. This month's meeting will be held online through a public video conference. A public link and phone number to attend the meeting virtually can be found on our website at kboo.fm. Please visit our website to verify if a meeting is being held.
Hello and welcome to Pathways, where you are invited to join me for a visit with luminaries in personal development and cultural evolution. This is your host, Paul O'Brien. And boy, do we have a luminary for you today, folks. We're going to talk about psychedelic therapy. And psychedelic therapy is opening new portals of transformation. And we're learning that it can be especially valuable when approaching the end of life. Facing the end of life with courage and serenity is challenging, but our guest suggests that there are tools for overcoming end-of-life distress, and he should know. Our guest today is Dr. Richard Lewis Miller, author of the new book, Psychedelic Medicine at the End of Life, Dying Without Fear. Richard's been a guest on Pathways before, and we're thrilled to have him back to discuss his latest book. Richard has been a clinical psychologist for more than 60 years. He's the host of the internet radio broadcast Mind, Body, Health, and Politics, and founder of the acclaimed Cokeenders Alcohol and Drug Program, and creator of the Health Sanctuary at Wilbur Hot Springs. He's been a faculty member at the University of Michigan and Stanford University, and an advisor on the President's Commission on Mental Health. He lives in Fort Bragg, California, in Wilbur Hot Springs. Hello, Richard, and welcome back to the Pathways Show.
Thank you so much, Paul, and thank you for that lovely introduction.
Okay, so let's talk about this book, which I found very exciting because I'm getting old, and you're ahead of me. I mean, this is a book about dying and how to do it well with the help of psychedelics. And as you tell it, your personal histories involve real-life brushes with physical death and many ego death experiences. Your story is amazing. I'm surprised you're still alive in a physical sense, but tell us a little bit about your experiences with death and ego death.
Thank you, Paul. You know, sometimes I'm surprised I'm still alive myself. You know, that one motorcycle accident was really it was large, and you know, without going too much into detail, I was run over by a Winnebago recreational vehicle, and both my legs were crushed. It ran right over me, and that's the kind of thing that kills almost everybody because of the shock and the weight of the vehicle going over. And what I was able to do automatically is conscious breathing, and I used conscious breathing to save my life. Yeah. It's not the only time. I have other stories I can tell you as well about when I use conscious breathing to save my life. Because what happens, I mean, everything freezes and everything goes into high alert. And inside my consciousness, I was seeing red, literally red lights flashing. And by going into conscious breathing, I was able to stabilize myself by making certain that all the cells were still getting oxygen. That is, if they hadn't been ripped apart by the force of the Winnebago, and in that case, I would be bleeding out and I'd be dead. You know, if that were the situation, I'd be dead within a certain number of minutes, you know, all the blood running throughout my legs.
So that was, did you have like what they call a near-death experience?
I saw myself leaving my body. I saw myself going way, way out into the dark universe. And when I was way, way out and I could not feel my body in the slightest, I was simply spirit and presence. When I was way, way out, I had a vision of myself sitting in a wheelchair with a strap around my chest holding me into the wheelchair because I had no legs. And I was sitting in my office with a patient, and I heard a voice from out of the darkness say to me, "Even without your legs, you can make a contribution."
Wow.
And when I heard that, something inside of me changed, and I watched that picture of myself coming back from the darkness, coming back into my body, and I open up my eyes. All the motorcycle gang was around me, yelling and screaming, and I said, "Get me a helicopter, I'm going to live."
It's amazing you have the presence of mind. So what did that experience, what impact did it have on your attitude about death?
I will tell you, but first I'm going to tell you a little more of the story because you're going to love it.
Okay.
First of all, I get in the helicopter and the guy wants to take me to Santa Rosa Memorial and I want to go to UC Medical. And I get into an argument with him. Now, I was just run over by a Winnebago and I'm arguing with the helicopter pilot. So finally he says, "I'm not going to do it. I'm going to Santa Rosa." And I said, "Okay, so what it comes down to is you have a contract with them and you won't let me pay you to go to UC Med because some violation of your contract." And he said, "That's exactly right." So he takes me to Santa Rosa Memorial. Very different than going UC Med. It was made me a little, you know. I get in there, I get in the emergency room, they cut off all my clothes, I'm laying there naked, and I feel this yank on my leg, ah! And I yell out, "Wah!" like that. "What was that?" And this man walks over to me, and he says, "Hello, I'm Dr. Bodner, and I was relocating your leg because the lower part of your leg is no longer connected to the upper part of your leg." And I said, "Well, next time, introduce yourself before you pull my leg." And he said, "Are you aware of what happened to you?" And I said, "Of course, I've kept myself conscious the whole time." He said, "Well, we've talked to your wife and we've got her permission to amputate your legs. You know you were run over by a Winnebago." And I said, "Well, my wife could give you permission to amputate her legs, but no one in this world can give you permission to amputate my legs except me. Now, why do you want to amputate? And he said, "Because you got run over by a Winnebago. You could be bleeding out right now." And I said, "Doctor, that accident happened, what, 45 an hour ago by the time they got the helicopter and got me here and got me in this room and took off my clothes? If I was going to bleed out, I'd be dead by now." And he said, "Well, I guess you're right." I said, "How about we do an angiogram and check my arterioles and see how I'm doing in there?" So he did. And he came back and he said, "I can hardly explain, but your vascular system is intact and you are not leaking internally." At which point I wiggled my nose. I wiggled my toes and I said, "Looks like my nerves are working too." And he said, "Yes." I said, "Well, then we can save my legs."
Beautiful story. It's amazing you were able to maintain presence of mind throughout all that. And you explain how you do that in this book. I love this book. It's so full of practical information, like, you know, diaphragmatic breathing and et cetera. Now, you do say in the book that you don't like to talk about dying, but you wrote a book about death and more specifically, end of life distress. What was your primary motivation for writing this book?
Well, I did that because even though I don't particularly care to talk much about death, I think it's an overrated, it's a much overrated part of life. I mean, it's a very brief part of life. It happens at the very end for most people. And given the amount of life we have to celebrate, I don't particularly want to spend a lot of time on the transition process that we know so little about. I mean, that's the major reason. We just don't know anything about it, as far as I'm concerned. We don't have any way of knowing there's more after this or not after this or whatever. However, that ties in to the book. Because since we really don't have knowledge that we can grasp, see, for me to know something, unlike from Missouri, they used to say, I got to taste it, I got to smell it, I got to feel it, I got to touch it, or I got to hear it. I have to be able to sense something to believe it. Now, does that mean I don't believe in the possibility of spirits? Of course not. Very possible. Very possible. Do I believe it's possible that the soul leaves the body? Possible, but not for sure. It's an unknown to me.
Didn't you experience that? Consciousness leaving the body?
But I was still theoretically alive. I was not over the next side. As far as I know, I didn't see the lights go out.
Okay.
Right? I didn't see them go out. So people came along thousands of years ago and they sold the masses this great story. They sold them the story that there is a hereafter.
Yeah.
And not only did they sell them on a hereafter, they sold them on a hereafter that is really the most wonderful thing you can imagine if you acted in a certain way that we're going to tell you about. But if you didn't act in that certain way, you're not going to that place in the sky where there are angels playing harps. You're going to the fires of hell. You're going down, and you will roast in hell forever. And that scares people, and people don't want to be rotting in hell and burning forever.
So especially when they're burning people at the stake.
Especially when people are getting nailed to the cross and burned to the stake all over the place.
Right.
No question. Right. And so they're saying, well, okay, I tell you what, I'll play by your rules, but don't send me down there. I'll play by your rules. I'll go to your big building. You call a church. I'll do it and send me up there. As a result of all this, Paul, and now I'll get serious, untold numbers of people are afraid of dying. They're scared because they know they've sinned. How do they know? Because we've all sinned. None of us is perfect. We've all made mistakes, done stupid things, things we're not proud of, whatever it is. We try to do better.
Yeah.
But we've all done that. So yeah. When Judgment Day comes, it's easy for anybody to say, I think I may be going down because I did a bunch of stuff that wasn't in the rules.
You know, I've said that I think God is having an identity crisis. He can't decide whether he's the God, the judge, or the God of love. And we're taught about both of these, but there's a lot more emphasis on God, the judge. And, you know, I'm going
to
ask...
Paul, wait a sec. Wait, no, I got to talk to you.
Okay.
You're right. I love the point you made. There's a lot more emphasis on God the judge. And so God the judge is winning out, and there are a lot of people who are scared. And those scared people, have a high percentage of them, are afraid of dying. And that's what my book is about.
Yeah, yeah.
My book is trying to bring something to them that will make their anxiety and their depression easier,
right,
and more graceful.
Now, you make the point that there are commonalities between near-death experiences, ego death, and actual death. And of course, the ego death is related to psychedelics. And so, in your opinion, does taking psychedelics help us be ready for actual death?
I am certain that psychedelics, when used properly, sometime with the right kind of guide, prepare us beautifully for the final real death experience.
Right.
From my own experience, the first time I took LSD at the University of Michigan, 400 morning glory seeds that I read about in Leary and Alpert's book, The Tibetan Book of the Dead, and we went out and bought all these heavenly blue and pearly gates morning glory seeds, and I figured out how to eat 400 of them. Very hard to get 400 seeds down, especially dry. Should have put them in a cereal. And anyway, the death that one goes through when properly guided under psychedelics, that's referred to as an ego death, is dying. In order to go through that, you have to let go of life and let yourself go. And what happens with psychedelics is when you let yourself go, you go through some kind of a symbol. In my case, it was going through like a vortex of air and clouds and through a hole right in the middle of the clouds.
Right.
And right. And everybody has their own symbol, but you go through it because you've let yourself go and you're ready to die.
Right. I feel my psychedelic experience has prepared me for death. You know, I've had so much ego death experiences. I'm a little younger than you, but not much. And I lived through the 60s in San Francisco, and I took LSD probably 75 times, you know, pretty heavy doses. And I got pretty good at letting go. I'm thinking I'm going to be okay at the end of the day as a result.
You are going to be okay. You are going to be okay because you know what it's like to let go, because I imagine you also know what it's like when you get that close and you don't let go. It feels there's like a conflict. It's like an uncomfortable feeling, wouldn't you
say? Right. Oh, absolutely. That's called a bad trip.
Well, and the reason it's called a bad trip is because the person going through it is frightened because they think they're going to die.
Right.
And they hold on to life, but they're scared of letting go. And it's that fear that makes a bad trip. But if they have a great guide with them, the guide can help them make it through that beautiful hole in the clouds.
What about an afterlife? What is it? You know, I believe in reincarnation, which I derive a lot of hope and meaning from that personally. It's just a chosen belief. I can't prove it. But it makes me feel like, well, there is no death, and any good karma that I accumulate is going to help me get some leverage with God about, you know, please don't send me back there, you know, that in the afterlife.
I hope you're right. I would really like it if you were right, because that would be so much fun. I myself once had one experience under ketamine, taken intravenously.
Wow.
Where I saw my soul leaving my body and joining with a huge pink Mobius strip of souls flying through the universe. And I imagined that this Mobius strip of souls every once in a while had little drippings that came down, little energy drippings that came out of it and fell to Earth, and that was creating new people.
Right.
That was a psychedelic vision. That's all.
That's a good one. I like that. So what kind of psychedelics are best for end-of-life care, in your opinion?
I don't think it's so much a matter of best, although I will answer that question. I think it's more a matter of what's realistically available.
Well, there's that. But I mean, if everything was available, what would you recommend?
If everything was available, then I would recommend training people with LSD and using the LSD to go through ego death, and then to teach the people how that ego death is exactly what they're going to be dealing with someday in real death, and how if they fight it under LSD, it becomes what's called a bad trip. It's a scary situation. And if they let go under LSD, it's a beautiful, beautiful experience of letting go. And with chemicals, you wake up and come back and you have more. But in the final time, you may or may not wake up and have more.
The downside of LSD is how long the trip lasts, which can be 10 hours or so.
I agree with you.
Yeah, you said that in your book.
It's one of the major drawbacks. And there, of course, are chemists looking for the Holy Grail, which will be an LSD trip that lasts maybe 2 to 4 hours.
Well, why do you think LSD is superior to psilocybin? I mean, if you take 5 grams or something.
I think if you're willing to take 5 or 6 or 7 grams of psilocybin, you will get there to the same place and you will get the same guide. But there's one difference. Psilocybin has side effects that LSD does not have.
Oh.
And one of them is regurgitating. A certain percentage of the population take psilocybin and they regurgitate. And another percentage gets stomach upsets. So those are two physical things. And the regurgitation is a very big issue for some people. I mean, right. it feels so uncontrolled and nasty and you know, and so on, that they don't want to get involved with. So they think their system is saying, I've been poisoned and I got to get rid of this stuff as soon as possible. And there's something to be said for that.
Yeah, that's certainly a common experience with ayahuasca. Let's talk about a dying plan. You know, we have so much to talk about, we don't have much time. A dying plan is something that you recommend. What is that?
A dying plan is when you take, by the way, you said we don't have much time. I have something I must talk about on this program before we close, Paul. So if you could leave us 5 to 7 minutes, I'd sure appreciate it. Could that work?
Well, we have about 5 minutes right now, so go ahead.
Okay. Last August, my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. I jumped right in, artificial intelligence, learned every single possible thing I could about breast cancer. This is why I want to say this on your program, Paul. It turns out that 50% of the women in the United States have something called dense breast tissue. If you have dense breast tissue, you are much more likely to get breast cancer, number one. And number two, when you have dense breast tissue, the gold standard for detection of breast cancer is the mammogram. The mammogram does not necessarily function well on dense breast tissue. And most of the women in the United States do not know that yet. And many doctors in the United States do not know that, or they're not aware of it. But my wife was taking mammograms and told she was okay, until somebody in the doctor's office said, maybe you better get an ultrasound. And she got the ultrasound, Paul, and she has cancer. But what it also means is she might have had cancer for all those other years and it was undetected. So her life was jeopardized by the lack of information. And that's why I wanted to say this on your program. So we together get the word out more about dense breast tissue and getting an ultrasound in addition to a mammogram.
Okay, but I want to ask a question about death with dignity, which is something Yes. you talk about in your book. And you have a death with dignity strategy of your own. What is your philosophy of suicide?
Well, I believe that every person has a sovereign right to end their own life, pure and simple. I don't think it's the state or any religion's business, or anybody else's business for that matter, to tell a human being when they should leave or shouldn't leave. I think that decision is up to each of us. I think that's part of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. I think that's part of all of us are created equal. I think that's part of life, and I stand on that. And I think any of us can end it. Now, do I go along with having people get interviewed and find out that it's not a rash decision, or if they're, you know, et cetera, various things? Yes, a certain amount of interviewing, perhaps, but not putting them through grilling for days and days and days.
Right.
You know, I think it's fair enough if you can tell if a person's mentally competent and let them be on their own and let them take themselves out. I just read, like, as one of my most famous, if not my most famous colleague, Daniel Kahneman, just flew to Switzerland and left this way of living.
Wow.
Moved on to another.
And in Switzerland, myself, you can do it for any reason you want.
Yeah. For myself, Paul, I would like to throw a big party and invite friends and acquaintances and say goodbye to everybody in person and tell them to skip the funeral deal because I won't be able to make it.
I love it. You know, that reminds me of a movie I saw, a documentary called Dying in Oregon, I think it was called. And it was the story of a woman who did something like that. It was really beautiful. That's very cool.
And I think I saw it. Didn't she spend the weekend with her family and then on Monday? Right.
Yeah, now she was terminal. But yeah, well, that's very interesting, Richard. I want to talk to you some more. We got to interview you again because we are running out of time now.
I'm going to put my book up on the screen.
Oh, yeah, please do. Psychedelic Medicine for the End of Life. This is such a great, informative book about death and dying and how to do it, how to make it fun.
How to make it fun. Yes, Paul, you can say it. How to make it fun.
And you tell the story of people who took psychedelics on their deathbed, like Aldous Huxley, and who was the other?
Huxley took 100 micrograms, and he had it injected, so it came on real fast.
Right.
That took a lot of courage.
Right. Yeah, no, did Timothy Leary do that too?
I'm not so sure whether he did or not. Uh-huh. Timothy also had his head cut off and sent, you know, frozen.
I love it. Wow. Talk about fantasies of immortality. Anyway.
Well, I'm really looking forward to interviewing you on my program I can ask you a lot of questions.
Oh, that's going to be so much fun. Thank you for being with us, Richard. There's so much more we have to talk about, and we're going to do it. But for today,
we'll do it.
Because it's a radio show, we have run out of time. And I want to be sure to tell our listeners about your website, which is drrichardlewismiller.com. All one word, drrichardlewismiller.com. And for those who may have tuned in to Pathways Late, this is your host, Paul O'Brien. Now, don't worry, you can play or share this interview whenever you want via the internet or as a free podcast, and I'll tell you how in a minute. Today, we've been visiting with Dr. Richard Lewis Miller, author of the book, Psychedelic Medicine at the End of Life, Dying Without Fear. What a beautiful concept. And I want to say a heartfelt thank you to all of our listeners for tuning into Pathways, which is broadcast on KBOO.FM in Portland, Oregon. And you can always listen to the podcast version for free at divination.com, that's spelled divination.com, as well as on Pathways Radio, if you look up Pathways Radio on Paulo's YouTube channel. And there are other free podcast servers. So give us a thumbs up and subscribe on YouTube, and feel free to forward a link to your friends. This is Paulo bidding you adieu and reminding you to tell your friends about Pathways Podcast. And thanks again to Richard Lewis Miller and to all of you listeners for tuning in and being a part of the Pathways conversation.
listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Bye.
Hi, this is Cecil Prescott. Celeste Carey and I are the co-hosts for More Talk Radio, which airs on KBOO FM 90.7 on Mondays